It is not unheard of for parents and their children to write books together. A bunch of examples are out there, but most involve living collaborations between parent and child. Our next guest and his father did not get along for many years. Josh Gross and his father, Arnie, are listed as the co-authors of a book called The Funeral Papers. If you stop and think for a second about that title, the answer is yes. Josh got a bunch of Arnie's writing at Arnie's funeral. Josh lives in Ashland. He'll read parts of his book tonight at 7 at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
No problem. Glad to be here.
So you grew up in Ashland.
I went to Briscoe School back when it was a school.
What was your relationship? And it is, well, it's still got some functions like a school now, but not, it's not an elementary school in the Ashland district. What was your relationship with your dad like through your childhood?
Oh, it was pretty complicated. When we moved up here to Oregon when I was 5 years old. I was born in the Sausalito houseboats just across the bay from San Francisco. We moved up here and, he kind of stopped working once we got here. And, it was one of those things where like when, they'd be like, everyone's like, what do your parents do for work? And I was like, my dad takes a lot of naps on the couch. And everyone's like, what? And I was like, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I've been trying to figure this out. I'm 7 years old. And I'm like, why? What are you doing? You know, so we didn't get along very well because I sort of, thought it was sort of like, what's your deal? I don't get it. And, part of that was he was like, I'm a writer. You don't understand me. I'm a writer. I can't work. I can't do things because I got to write. And then he just never really wrote anything. So it was kind of like, what? I don't get you, man. Like, I'm a doer and you seem to be a napper and a, you know, so it was like just a disconnect.
So you never saw any evidence of his writing?
No, I really didn't. And that was part of why it was such a, so the whole sort of premise of the book is that, at his funeral a couple years ago, I was given this big packet of his writing and I was like, what? This exists? What? I thought this was like a myth. You know, this was just like his excuse and sorts kind of had forced me to re-examine a lot of what I thought I knew. And so the book is kind of the process of like going through those papers and sort of reacting to them. So it's a memoir of my, it's both like he wrote a lot of memoir pieces, a lot of sort of biographical like stuff about life in the Sausalito houseboats community, which was a very, you know, unusual sort of way of living. Basically a sort of illegal pirate, trailer park on the San Francisco Bay that was like a literal war with the county authorities. And then, you know, my sort of like experiences, like the history of our relationship and what it was like sort of like going through these papers and dealing with it.
Had you ever seen any of his writing before that?
You know,
moment?
I will say there's one sort of asterisk that goes in there, which is that while reading through these stories, I did realize that one of them I had seen before. And it was when I was in like third grade and my teacher called us all in. I think it was Mrs. Pauk, Briscoe School, if you're out there, big ups. she called us in and she's like, all right, we're going to do story time, children. And we gathered around and we read this story. And then at the end of it, she's like, and this story was written by Josh's dad. And I was like, what? Why are you picking on me? I was like, you know, didn't want anyone looking at me. And, I realized I'd heard that one before. But other than that, this was all, you know, just a sort of shot across the bow.
Did he hide his writing from you deliberately, or was it just that you weren't paying attention enough or didn't like him enough to want to watch?
Column A, column B, you know, a little bit of, you know, could have been a little bit of both, but I mean, but he didn't publish. He didn't seem to send it out there. Didn't do much. I did ask my mom about it and she said he like sent some stuff to a publisher a couple times and they were kind of like, well, this is good, but who would want to read it? Which is, you know, because he was so obsessed with, you know, the people, a lot of the, like the life on the houseboat community, which at the time was a very, very outsider thing to do. So it's not, you know, it was very esoteric, a lot of insider baseball. And the thing I think part of it failed was it didn't really have the ability, it didn't really give context. Like for him, it was like, I know these people, so obviously they're cool. And to everyone else, it's like, no, you kind of got to establish what the interest in them is. And I think that was hard. He did write a newspaper column for a number of years, called Tripping Along the Bridgeway, which I didn't know about. And I had to go down and dig to San Francisco and like dig through some newspaper archives to find. And that was kind of that was pretty interesting because it was pretty avant-garde for a newspaper column. I mean, it's definitely not something that would be published now. It was almost like sort of stream of consciousness poetry, as a, like a regular featured column. So that's pretty unusual, even I think back then in the Beat era.
Which paper was that?
It was the Marin Scope. He also wrote for a couple of paper called the Garlic Press, which kind of serviced just the Sausalito houseboats. And there was one or two other papers that were sort of internal to the houseboat community, but it was mostly for Marin Scope and the Garlic Press.
Ashland's Josh Gross is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His co-memoir with his late father, Arnie Gross, is called The Funeral Papers. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have questions or observations. Maybe you've run across Josh's work in the past. 800-838-3760. By phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Berg. I want to get to a sense of just how severe the split between you and your father was. You had written in here, "I wanted to forget I shared genetic material with this man."
Yeah, a little bit.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't see eye to eye on anything. We were coming from like polar opposite views on religion, politics, like generational stuff. Like he just wanted to live his life in an entirely different way than I wanted to live mine. I thought he was like, didn't have his, life together and was just like messing around. And I thought he thought the exact same thing about me. He was always trying to convince me to be a mechanic. And I was like, I am a rock and roll player. When I touch tools, things light on fire. Like, why would you want me to be a mechanic? It's just like, we couldn't communicate. He was always trying to force me to be religious. It was a very long campaign of like trying to force me into religion. And so, like, eventually it became so severe that we just split off. And because it was like every time we would talk, it would be just like panic attacks. And
so let's talk on the childhood end.
Sure.
Like your aversion to cottage cheese, for example.
Well, yeah, my aversion to cottage cheese comes from the fact that he got it in his head that cottage cheese would cure me of the flu and like force fed it to me because I was homesick one day and was like literally just spooning it down my throat and I was throwing it up at the same time. And it was just like, I don't know what. Like weird holistic healing person he listened to think that was going to help, but it was the worst possible thing, and it's now like something I can't even look at. But it was just like, why would you do this? Like, what's your end goal here? You know, and a lot of that came from, and this is discussed in the book, is he'd read a novel called The Chosen by Chaim Potok, which is a very famous novel. I think it won the National Book Award. I know it's been translated for Broadway and for film. And it's all about a Jewish rabbi basically emotionally abusing his child in order to teach him like what pain is so they'll know empathy. And it is like a decades long story of child abuse. And at the end, you're like, oh, I get it. That's so cool. Thanks for abusing your child. I get it. And he wrote me this letter about how that was what he was going for. And I was like, I don't know if you're making this up just to reverse justify it or if you actually believe that. I don't know which is worse. All I know is like, that's kooky. And not like fun kooky.
Yeah. Sort of like, what's the reference in the book to like a boy named Sue or something?
Yeah. So it's like a boy named Sue. I gave him that name so he'd learn to be tougher, you know, and die. And which is especially funny because A Boy Named Sue was written by Shel Silverstein, who also lived on the Sausalito houseboats.
Wow.
So
that's quite a connection there.
Yeah.
All right. Then later on in life, he pulls up in a car when you're 18 and you plug your ears, la, 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 don't want to hear from him.
Picture maturity.
How did he finally get your attention?
He got my attention by telling me that my uncle was coming to visit and they were going to give me $500,000, and unprompted. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, so you're going to want to talk to him. And that was just something he made up just to because I didn't want to talk to him. So he just decided that my uncle was going to give me $500,000. And what he later said was, you see, son, that's the Zen master's way of hitting the student in the head with a stick in order to get his attention. But now that I have your attention, I was thinking maybe we could have coffee sometime. It was like, are you insane? Like, what? So that was why we didn't get along. It was just every conversation it was like talking with someone who was on acid all of the time. Like, there was no just like realistic or objective like through line of, you know, narrative. It was impossible to make sense of what was what.
Josh Gross put out some of his father's writing alongside his own in a book called The Funeral Papers. He'll be reading tonight at 7 at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mary in Ashland, who sounds like has some recollections of you.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hey, this is a good call from your past, Josh.
Oh.
Well, good call for me. I was your van driver.
Oh, hey, Mary. How's it going?
Oh, my gosh. This is an incredible moment for me to listen to you on public radio.
Oh, stop.
I know I tortured you kids for miles and miles.
No, you let us pick the music
public radio
sometimes.
And my stories. And for me to be out cleaning my garage this morning and turn on the radio and here you are. I remember you as just a bright ball of remarkable, brilliant energy. So, bravo. This is really exciting. I love hearing that you're doing the work that you're doing.
You played public radio on the van, though? I want to get that part clear.
No, yeah. Oh, yes.
I believe she said she tortured us with public radio.
And my stories together to try to keep everybody, you know, somewhat from bouncing off the walls inside the car. Anyway, those were remarkable years, and I really congratulate you. Josh, it's wonderful to hear your work.
Oh, thanks, Mary.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling, Mary. Very much appreciate the memories in there. So when you get this packet of papers at the funeral, are we talking a really thick envelope or a fairly slender one? Or
you know, it was fairly slender, I thought, for a life's work. But, I mean, you go through drafts of things, so you're never really sure how much of it, or like how much of it was lost over time. But what I got was basically like your basic manila envelope, you know, about a half inch to an inch thick, which is probably the length of an average book, but not a whole lot for like someone's entire life's work. I found more things over time because I went and dug through some newspaper archives in San Francisco, and I was able to track down some stuff from family friends. The day the book was sent to the printers, I got three boxes of something sent to me that I'd been bugging them for years. And most of it was stuff I had already had, but I was like, really? The day the book goes to the printers? Come on, man.
So once you got this, first of all, who gave you the packet of stuff?
The guy who gave it to me was my father's caretaker, because he had dementia towards the end, and I was a man who had been sort of like handled some of his affairs, and he'd been kind of trying to track me down for a number of years, and I just didn't want any of it. And we, both me, my sister, and my mom, I think, all got the same packet. And it was just, and we got it all at the funeral, and it was a very strange funeral. It had like a piece of surrealist performance art with like gate crashing accordionists, and it like turned into pretty much like an open mic. And part of the problem was that like me and my dad, we didn't get along because he was kind of like a serial liar, is sort of how I thought about it. And what was so weird is that all of those lies were then repeated as people were talking about his, you know, like talking about his life, you know, in the special forces. And, you know, it was like, what? He was never in the special forces. And, you know, all this, his mechanic got up and like talked about his, the transmission in his truck. And I was like, I get that this is a treasured memory for you, but man, like what are you doing here? Like, this is so weird.
So once you got a chance to dig into the packet, first of all, did you come close to chucking it in a recycle bin, given your feelings about him?
Yeah, I mean, well, no, because, I mean, I knew the moment I got it, I knew I was going to have to read it eventually, but it was kind of like, it took months and months before I did, because I knew it was going to be like cracking open Pandora's box of like everything I've been trying to not deal with for a long time.
And so as you went through it, I mean, what happened?
Well, that's what the book's about. come find out. Come down to Bloomsbury tonight, 7. We're not spoiling the ending. I'll tell you one thing. We were on Earth the entire time, and it was really Tyler Durden. No, I'm not going to spoil the ending. But no, that's what the book is about. It's kind of like that going on that journey. And the idea was that by sort of juxtaposing the pieces of his writing, which are curated, because some of them are kind of unreadable, but the better pieces alongside with the sort of my journey and our story together, it kind of brings the reader along and what that was like to kind of go through that packet also.
But I guess the major point I'm trying to make here is this stuff is not garbage. I mean, you felt highly enough about it that it's like, wow. I mean, so there must have been a few, you know, layers and years of stuff peeling off of
you.
Well, I
will say that it was a lot longer before we started. So some of it was not as good. There were actually a couple pieces I regretted of his that couldn't make it into the book, but it was mostly because they were too long. The story I mentioned that we read in the third grade, that one was about 5,000 words, which is fairly lengthy. So it kind of would have thrown off the whole like balance, because the other chapters are kind of like they go back and forth pretty concisely. So that one's kind of included for people who did pre-sale as like a deluxe edition, and we're going to probably put that online somewhere because I know he was really proud of that story. But a lot of it was really good, and that was the part that was kind of surprising to me, is that I was like, well, okay. But I both thought this is going to be an interesting story, and I also thought this is a way to potentially get some of his work out there in a way he was never able to do. So it was sort of a combination thing. There's also a very cynical part of me that was like, hey, I only have to write half this book. That'll be way easier.
So what does that feel like, to run screaming away from your father for all those years and now to not only embrace his work, but to put it out alongside your own?
It's a little weird. But I mean, you know, you can't really escape who you are. And I think maybe that's the, like, people spend, I think, their 20s trying to create their own identity and break off. And then in their 30s, they're like, yeah, well, maybe I wasn't, the things I was running from were not objectively the worst thing in the history of time, including Hitler and pickles, you know? So like, so I don't know. You gotta kind of warm up to it. You gotta embrace who you are. You gotta turn back into the wind. And I think that's some of what this is, but it's complicated. There's a lot going on there, but that's why I wrote a book about it.
All right. All right. A lot of complications in there, but that's really fascinating writing from both Josh Gross and his late father, Arnie Gross. He got the Arnie's papers at Arnie's funeral. Therefore, the book is called The Funeral Papers. Josh Gross will appear tonight at 7 at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland, reading from the book and talking about it and meeting with anybody who wants to talk about it. We've had some fun here. Thanks for joining us
today. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care.
You too.